Well, it's been about a month since a 9-year-old girl accidentally shot and killed her instructor with an Uzi at an Arizona firing range. Long enough for that story to fade from the headlines, but of course not enough time to have at all receded for the families of either the instructor or the girl. As Gregory Orr knows well, his recent essay in the New York Times begins, "When I was 12 years old, I killed a younger brother in a hunting accident near our home in upstate New York." We want to spend a few minutes today on this unbearable thought. What happens when you accidentally kill someone? How do you go on? Gregory Orr is now a poet and a professor of English at the University of Virginia. His most recent collection is called River Inside the River. He joins us. And Greg, we are so sorry to hear of your loss. But after that tragedy in Arizona, someone at the New York Times approached you about writing an op-ed. And you said you had no desire to write an opinion piece, say, on guns.
I don't really believe in that because I'm a poet. What I believe in is the testimony of the individual. So I said, if you can accept the testimony of someone who's gone through that experience and find that interesting, then I'll try.
Yeah. And how long ago was this? What year?
Oh, 1959.
Yeah. Long time ago.
Time.
But it feels, I mean, I'm going to be cliched, you know, it sounds as if it's like yesterday for you, and especially when there's another event like this that reminds you of it.
Well, I think we know by now that trauma is not like ordinary experience. It doesn't just get stored away and gradually erode from memory. It tends to both exist with enormous intensity in its moment and also to reassert itself periodically throughout the life. That's a sad thing to say, but it seems to be pretty much true.
Yeah.
So it does come back, and when it comes back, it can come back with a great deal of intensity.
Well, and in this moment, a terrible accident. And I have to ask, you know, what happened? Were you shooting at something he was in the way? Did the gun go off by mistake? I mean, what happened?
Yes. We had gone hunting on the first day of deer season with my father. My older brother, who was 14, and I, who was 12, were invited hunters to go with my father. And my two younger brothers, at the very last moment, got invited along by wailing and crying and so forth, as young kids might. We had gone to a place where we knew deer passed on a hillside. About an hour later, we saw a deer. We shot that deer. We ran down to it. I believed that I had fired the single bullet in the chamber of my gun. And so as we were standing in this huddle around the dead deer, my father said, "Make sure your chambers are cleared. Make sure your gun is empty." And I, assuming that it completely was, pointed it off to my side, not down to the ground as one should, and pulled the trigger. And instead, it, in fact, had not shot. And and it hit my brother, who was standing right next to me. He fell dead.
Oh, my God.
End of story, start of story.
Oh, what a horror. You have this intense knowledge now of what a fatal accident does. It's as if the world, and as you write, a rural field in your case, becomes a stage set. It's got like got old-fashioned paint backdrops. It's not real anymore. And your accident has torn a gash in the scenery. Everything is changed.
Why don't I try reading a poem, since in a sense it's about what we're talking about here now.
Sure.
And it's called A Moment. The field where my brother died, I've walked there since. Weeds and grasses, some chicory stalks. No trace of the scene I still can see. A father and his sons bent above a deer they'd shot. Then screams and shouts. Always I arrive too late to take the rifle from the boy I was. Too late to warn him of what he can't imagine. How quickly people vanish. How one moment you're standing shoulder to shoulder. The next, you're alone in a field. I mean, I know this isn't a poetry show, but it's, I mean, that is the form of testimony that I can give. And it's that awful sense that this, you know, this can't be predicted. You can't know it's going to happen. And then after that, everything is aftermath. How does one respond? And it's the world of suffering. The world of suffering has come in on a group of individuals, and they must respond somehow.
And Greg, just, you know, the children of the Arizona instructor who was killed last month sent a video message to that 9-year-old girl who accidentally shot him. And they said, you know, you're only 9. We think about you. We're worried about you. We pray for you. We wish you peace. Our dad would want that. Do you think that'll help?
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. She's the only one who knows.
Yeah. Gregory Orr, a poet, professor of English at the University of Virginia. Again, he accidentally shot and killed a younger brother when he was 12. His thoughts on the 9-year-old who accidentally killed her gun instructor. A community, as he found out, of people who have accidentally killed. If you're just joining us, we've been talking to Gregory Orr, University of Virginia professor and poet. His recent essay in the New York Times began, "When I was 12 years old, I killed a younger brother in a hunting accident." He wrote the piece about that day and the aftermath after a 9-year-old girl accidentally shot and killed her instructor at an Arizona firing range with an Uzi last month. And Greg, in the piece, you don't make any political statements. You're loath to make any assumptions about what this young girl and her family may be suffering. But you know, have an idea of what people can say or not say to them. What can happen after an accident like this?
Silence can happen, does happen. Isolation, guilt, fear, shame. How do you respond? How do you respond to the suffering that's not just come down on the person who's caused that accident, but the people around them who also feel completely responsible? And silence isn't the answer. But I also know, oddly, that premature consolation is not the answer either. To say it was an accident, for one thing, actually, the word just trembles in the face of that kind of event. It's not adequate. What you've seen is a kind of glimpse of the terror of existence. So accident doesn't help. And then how do we comprehend it? I think one of the things that happened for me that upset me was that the very same day that I was hiding in my room trying not to feel what I was feeling and not to know what I knew, a woman from our church came in to my room and she said, "Your brother's in heaven now. He's sitting down with Jesus." And that was what I'll call premature consolation, because every time I closed my eyes that day, I could see my brother lying dead at my feet. There's something going on here we can't understand. It's part of God's plan. These things didn't work.
Oh, so it's you say silence transforms guilt into shame. Silence is not the right approach. Premature consolation, not welcome. And you say you worry not just for the child, but also the parents, that in your family, it was the parents who retreated.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the parents retreated. My parents were going to divorce within a year, which was unheard of in the context that I lived at that time. These things are incredibly painful for everybody within that kind of circle. And my parents both blamed themselves, of course. Yeah. My mother was a person who said, when my two younger brothers started crying, that they wanted to go along even though they weren't supposed to. And we, of course, were saying, "They can't come, they can't come." And she said, "Oh, just let them go this time." Now, how do you think she must have felt to have to live with having said that out loud, and then never seeing her youngest son again alive. And, you know, my father, of course, a man reckless with guns, inappropriately putting them in the hands of young kids.
Did they stay together, ultimately?
My mother died overnight 2 years later. So it became irrelevant. We tried to stay together. We moved away to try to bring the family together, but she died overnight when I was 14. And that was tough, too, because I'd always imagined that someday I would try to speak to her about what had happened and to ask her forgiveness. And she was really the only figure I could imagine who might listen to me, but it wasn't going to happen.
Well, did you go hunting again?
No. No, to me, the world was, the world of meaning was destroyed. The other thing I did besides writing is I thought, oh, I'll do social activism, you know. So I went south to Mississippi in 1965 in the summer when I was 18. And all I did is get beaten up and kidnapped by armed vigilantes and stuff. It was the year after Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney were killed. And part of my reason for going there was thinking I might get killed in a good cause and thereby redeem myself. So that may be a bit of a darkish message.
Well, no, but it's instructive how many chapters you've had to go through.
Yeah.
To be
well,
here.
I'll say this. You know, there's a danger that this kind of trauma can destroy the self who's at the center of it, the person who's caused this accident. Or, you know, and I've heard from so many people where it wasn't a rifle. It was they were a teenager driving a car and crashed and their best friend was killed. And catastrophic traumatic violence like that, it challenges meaning. It suggests you maybe life doesn't mean anything. How could something like this happen? You know, if there's a God, if life means anything. And it's this incredible challenge to the human spirit. How do you assimilate this and then go on and live a life that's not only surviving, but that, you know, somehow tries to affirm meaning or something?
How did you? How do you?
Well, I'm on record as believing that poetry saved me, that I was so isolated. For me, poetry became a way of expressing what was in me, trying to make sense of it. What's beautiful about poetry is that it asks you to turn the world into words, you know? Mm-hmm. Turn everything that's inside you into words. And then it says, look, you know, we're going to really organize these words. We're going to try and make them fit on a single page and try to capture the joy or the terror or whatever it is, the suffering, the grief, you know, the confusion. And we're going to try to order it because poetry really is this extreme form of ordering. For me, poetry is something where it just offers a kind of intense hope. And I found poetry. Somebody encouraged me to write it. And I encourage other people to write it because every poem to me is an affirmation of being in the world. It's a way of saying life has meaning. Here are these words that are trying to sing.
Do you have a few lines that...
Here's a very few lines.
Yeah.
To be alive, not just the carcass, but the spark. That's crudely put, but if we're not supposed to dance, why all this music?
Gregory Orr, poet and professor of English at the University of Virginia. You can find his op-ed from the New York Times describing accidentally shooting and killing his brother when he was 12 at hereandnow.org. Greg, thanks so much. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for giving me the chance to speak.